Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, I'm looking at a Matt Powell video. It's been a while since I've covered any of his stuff, and the reason I haven't is mostly because the focus of his channel seems to have shifted more to the acting like an idiot in public, recording it, and calling it a prank style of content creation.
You both have a mask.
I mean, there's still a lot of young Earth creationist idiocy going on top of that, so it's not like there's nothing there to respond to, but the idiotic prank videos made it difficult to want to even see what's going on his channel anymore. So I guess they worked as an insulation against criticism for him? But no longer! This video is called Why I Am a Young Earth Creationist, so let's see what he's got!
Many people are of the persuasion that if you're a young Earth creationist, that somehow you've bought into a conspiracy theory.
I mean, essentially, yeah. What else would you call it when you insist that roughly 98% of scientists, plus or minus 2%, who agree that evolution is real are all either wrong or lying, and that the mainstream scientific journals refuse to allow any research to be published that doesn't agree with evolution? Even if you turn out to be correct, that is literally a conspiracy theory. And, as it happens, you are incorrect.
But I'm here to tell you that young Earth creationism and creation science itself is in fact the best explanation for the observations that we make in the world.
Well, if you think that's the case, then you don't understand the observations that we make. Or you're lying about them. Given your track record, I'm not willing to assume ignorance on your part in order to avoid the accusation of lying. I actually think that in your case, it is much more likely that you are lying than that you don't understand. Though really, it could be both.
Both is good.
You see, we find dinosaur soft tissue and dinosaur blood of dinosaurs that supposedly existed 65 plus million years ago.
Okay, this is a small thing, but what's with the air quotes when you say 65? I know you're trying to say that millions of years don't exist by putting quotes around it, but generally when using air quotes, you would put them around the word that they are actually supposed to be around. So to do the air quotes gesture while saying 65 and not continuing it through the million years ago, it suggests that you don't believe in the number 65. But yeah, fun fact, the paleontologist who made the soft tissue discovery in 2005, Mary Schweitzer, was a young Earth creationist at the time of her discovery, but became convinced in old ages and evolution through her work that you are saying supports young Earth creationism. Now, call me crazy, but I think that maybe the person who actually made the soft tissue discovery in the first place is better equipped to understand what the implications of her discovery are than some random YouTuber who thinks that American Civil War soldiers went pterosaur hunting because he saw a fake picture once.
I believe if we study history, you know, the Confederates were able to shoot pterodactyls, you know, back in the Civil War, and they spread these things out. Anybody can look it up online. They spread these things out. And this is a historical fact.
The best part about that is when he says that anybody can look it up online, because if you actually do look that up online, you'll find that Powell was wrong about two things here. First, and completely unimportantly except to put Powell's lack of attention to detail on full display, the men in the picture that he's referencing are dressed as Union soldiers, but he calls them Confederates. Second, and most damning, is that the pterosaur picture has a known origin. It was staged for the TV show Freaky Links, which was a TV show from 2000 to 2001 that tried to be The X-Files, but cryptozoology instead of aliens. Now, what creationists who actually use these pictures will tell you is that there are two pictures, one of which was featured in one episode of Freaky Links, but the other one is totally genuine. And they have to acknowledge this, because the photo that we all agree is fake happens to have used a prop pterosaur that you can still go and see in the International Cryptozoology Museum in Portland, should you wish to. So, what about the real photo then? Well, As it turns out, the production designer for Freaky Links didn't think that the photo they had was dramatic enough, so he hired an effects company to reshoot it. Also, apparently they never got the actors from the original photo to sign a release, so they weren't allowed to use it anyway. So what ended up happening is that the creationists acknowledged that one of the two photos was created for Freaky Links. But the photo that they claim is genuine is the photo that actually shows up in that episode of Freaky Links itself. And I took the liberty of pulling that clip for you.
What, a pterodactyl man?
A pteranodon, actually. They're much bigger.
Hold on, Derek. This whole Civil War thing could just be a hoax.
In other words, both photos were made using props for a TV show, but Matt thinks that they are proof of pterosaurs existing in North America at least up to the Civil War.
But this evidence that we've found not only contradicts that, but proves that the Bible was correct when the Bible told us that God made man and dinosaurs together.
Absolutely not. Even if I grant that soft tissues in dinosaur fossils means that the fossil has to be young, which it doesn't, but even if I grant that, all that would mean is that we have fossils from dinosaurs that lived later than we thought they did. There is nothing about the theory of evolution that says that non-avian dinosaurs had to go extinct 65 million years ago. If we found a dinosaur fossil that was younger than we had previously thought, then all that would mean is that we need to update the timeline for when they existed. Now, how exactly does this animal that we thought went extinct 65 million years ago was actually still alive just a few thousand years ago translate into God created dinosaurs and man on the same day 6,000 years ago? It doesn't. That's how.
One of the other reasons that we know that creation science is true is because we find bent rock layers all across the world.
This one is one of my favorite creationist claims, because it means I get to use the video I made where I showed you how you can bend a crayon without breaking it. And that experiment was pretty annoying to do. I used to just say in my videos that you could put a crayon in the oven for a bit and when it comes out it'll bend, but it turns out that the oven heats it too quickly and too much. So by the time the middle of the crayon is malleable enough to bend, the outside is just melted off. After playing around with various oven temperatures, settings, positions of the stuff in the oven, having the door open a crack, etc., I looked up the melting point for crayons. Probably should have started with that. But for Crayola, it's around 50 degrees Celsius. But they begin to melt at 40. So after a bit more trial and error, I figured out that the keep warm heating element on my stove could be set such that it would keep a pot of water at about 45 degrees indefinitely. And that finally worked. After sous-viding the crayon for a bit, I was able to bend it nearly in half without breaking it. And as it cooled, it solidified into that position. Now, why do I tell you all of this? For educational purposes. First, this is something that you can do at home, and now you've learned from my mistakes. This is a fun experiment that kids might like to do. And as a bonus, it preemptively protects them from falling for both creationism and the 9/11 truth or conspiracy nonsense. Yeah, jet fuel doesn't burn that hot, but it doesn't need to melt it, it just needs to soften it. Second, this is actually geologically relevant. You see, with these bent rock layers, when the rocks were deep within the crust of the Earth, they were subject to enough heat and pressure to produce these bends without completely melting the rocks themselves. But different rocks require different temperatures, and as I demonstrated with my multiple failed attempts to bend a crayon, having imperfect conditions will give you varying results, and it is very unlikely that perfect conditions would have existed for all of these various rock formations. So what would we expect to see as a result of imperfect conditions? Well, mostly fractures and partial metamorphism. And do you know what we find in these layers of rock that are bent? Mostly fractures and partial metamorphism. Even in rocks that appear to be bent without breaking, when examined under a microscope, you will find microfractures where the rock fractured and sediment from the fracture filled in the gaps and recrystallized.
Now, you cannot bend hard rock. According to evolution, these layers were slowly formed through plate tectonic shifts in the crust, but the truth is that these layers would have not only eroded as they're being created, right? Because gravity causes everything to erode flat over time.
Just in case you weren't already aware at this point, this statement is yet another dead giveaway that Matt doesn't have a fucking clue what he's talking about, no matter what the subject is. And regular viewers of the channel will know what's coming here, so roll the montage.
But in space, wouldn't it be a different scenario based on the fact that, you know, the space and the air in the space is much different than the air we have here? That out of his mouth go burning lamps and sparks of fire leap out. The dinosaurs they discovered have, the dragons they've discovered have chambers in the back of their head. It's where they can breathe fire. But that's just a couple things. I mean,
if it's about survival of the fittest and we evolved from African Americans into other Americans, what about the African Americans that are still alive today?
Well, I don't see anything wrong with quote mining.
I believe if we study history, you know, the Confederates were able to shoot pterodactyls.
T-Rex, they had short, stubby arms. And apparently now the chicken's able to do a handstand with those arms. Think about this. We have more in common genetically in certain areas with a gorilla than with an ape. Yet they say, genetically, we evolved from apes. We can tell based on genetics.
Honestly, John, I don't know a ton of technical terms. I'm very simple when it comes to science. I just enjoy simple science.
So I think what he's trying to say here is that the layers can't be bent because as they were forming, gravity would cause them to erode flat. Which is not true. Gravity is certainly involved in the sense that it's involved in literally everything that happens on the Earth, but erosional forces are things like wind, water, earth, fire, and heart. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I couldn't resist doing that, but my point is that erosional forces are mainly the ones that you learn about in elementary school science class, not gravity. And given that these bends formed while the rocks were deep underground, they would not have been subject to the same erosional forces as rocks on the surface would have been. In fact, erosion is one of the forces that revealed some of these rocks to us, along with tectonic activity.
Mountains wouldn't exist if millions of years existed, because gravity would have eroded those mountains.
Oh, poor little Maddie can't even keep his talking points straight. Sound off in the comments and let me know whether you think I should add that clip to the montage. So I guess for Matt, erosion is an argument against the existence of mountains rather than against the existence of bent rock layers? I don't even think Kent Hovind would have made such a ridiculous argument. Plate tectonics are a real thing that even young Earth creationists generally believe in, and mountains are formed when two plates hit each other and crumple up. And while it is a slow process, it's a faster process than erosion usually is, and it's a directly measurable one at that, a feature that Matt usually claims to love about science. It is a fact that Mount Everest gets about 4 millimeters taller every year, and it is also a fact that other mountains in the Himalayas are growing by as much as a centimeter per year. And because these are directly measurable facts, the vast majority of young Earth creationists don't argue that the existence of millions of years necessitates that the Earth would be a perfectly smooth ball because of erosion. I mean, there's a lot more to it than that, and even if it weren't for tectonic activity, we have no reason to believe that erosion would be uniform enough to ever accomplish the complete removal of surface features. But how much time do I really need to spend dismantling a point that other creationists would laugh at Matt for making?
But even if we enter into fantasy land and pretend that it's true, it does not explain the bends in the rocks that we observe.
Fantasyland in this case being something that young Earth creationists generally believe. And the way that Matt is presenting it gives me the impression that he doesn't even have a rudimentary understanding of the creationist argument involving bent rocks, much less the actual geological explanation for them. But I mean, that's par for the course for Matt. And at this point, I should probably explain for my newer audience why I go a bit harder when responding to Matt than I do for other people. It's because, more than any other creationist I cover, I have direct evidence of Matt being a complete piece of shit who gaslights and abuses those around him. I'll leave a link to an audio recording of Matt losing his shit on someone who thought that he was a friend. I'll not play it here because it's literally a recording of emotional manipulation and abuse, and YouTube would, rightly so in this case, demonetize my video if I included it here. But in that recording, he does things like scream, "You will go to hell," at the guy, calls him insane, tells him he's acting like a girl, tells him that he's a skinny little runt baby who can't think for himself, which, yeah, I don't know what the guy he's talking to looks like, but knowing what Matt looks like and seeing how poorly Matt does at putting his own spin on creationist ideas, seems like that might be more than a bit of projection on his part. And he does even more shitty stuff than that. So, given that, I don't pull my punches with Matt. He does not get the benefit of the doubt. He's a bad person, and if he sees my videos and feels bad, good. Now, at the same time, please do not go and comment mean things on his channel. Calling him out for his bullshit without worrying about how that makes him feel is one thing, but sending my followers to harass him is something else, and that crosses a line for me. Though, if he follows his normal MO, the video I'm responding to will be private for a while after mine goes up, so you probably couldn't just click the link in my description to leave a comment for him anyway.
You see, we observe these bends that literally show that these rocks were moist and soft and lifted up altogether in one event.
Lifted up altogether in one event is correct, but if they were moist and soft, as in had not gone through the lithification process to become rocks yet, but were still loose sediment instead, then you wouldn't get the layers of rock that were bent together like that. There would be mixing between the layers, especially at the stress points of the bend, where grains from the layers would get muddled together. But that's not what we see in these layers. They are distinct layers, which indicates that they were already fully lithified when the process that bent them began. But yeah, for any given bend, they were bent in the same event, and whatever processes brought them to the surface and exposed them would have been the same processes for all the layers that are there, because they're in the same spot. And this is a first for Matt. He seems to have accidentally said something that wasn't completely wrong. I mean, I know it's usually a case of broken clocks are right twice a day, but I don't think I've ever seen Matt cross the threshold from so wrong it's nonsensical into accidentally right before. So I was beginning to think that it wasn't a broken clock scenario, but a broken clock from which the hands have been removed scenario. Maybe Matt is a broken digital clock that just displays zeros and so is only correct once a day if you happen to use the 24-hour clock. I don't know. That still seems like it's giving him too much credit, but maybe?
In a catastrophic event, i.e. Noah's flood.
Whoops, spoke too soon. Consider the one credit for getting something accidentally correct to be revoked. Floods can certainly cause erosion, which can reveal rock layers that were previously hidden, but floods don't cause geologic uplift. Well, I mean, depending on whether or not we're playing fast and loose with the definition of what a flood even is, the quick and dirty Google definition is an overflowing of a large amount of water beyond its normal confines, especially over what is normally dry land. Since ice is frozen water, you might consider glaciation to be a flood. And when a glacier covers a large part of a continent, that continent will experience isostatic depression, where the weight of the glacier on top of the continent will literally push it down into the crust of the Earth. When the glacier recedes, it will then experience isostatic rebound, a process where the crust of the Earth begins to rise as a result of the massive weight being removed from it. And it'll actually rebound past where it would have been before the glacier pushed it down to form a bit of a hill. So, if we consider glaciation to be a form of flooding, which is more than a bit of a stretch, then yeah, flooding can cause some uplift. But I feel like this is more of a stretch than that joke about how water ice technically fits the definition of a rock, therefore liquid water on the surface of the Earth is technically lava, and that one's still quite a stretch.
Like I said before, creation science isn't just some theory or just some random thing that people believe in.
And here we have Matt not knowing what a scientific theory is. If he fully understood the implication of calling something a scientific theory, then he would probably rather say that creation science is indeed a theory, because a theory is a body of facts, hypotheses, and laws that comprehensively explain an aspect of the natural world. So, thank you, Matt, for admitting that creation science doesn't even come close to rising to the level of theory.
I'm a young Earth creationist because I believe in demonstrated fact that's been shown in real time, and that you can verifiably back up with facts and evidence.
In this video, you explain that you do not believe that mountains can grow faster than erosion can wear them down, something that is a demonstrated fact that has been shown in real time, and that you can verifiably back that up with facts and evidence. So, yeah, I don't think those are actually your criteria for believing in something.
One of the other things that proves creation science is mutation rates. From generation to generation, us humans accumulate 100 to 200 more mutations than our parents had.
Matt can't even get easily Googled facts correct. The number is not 1 to 200 mutations per generation. The number is typically 70, but can double in certain circumstances. So it's not 1 to 200, it's less than 70 to a maximum of about 140.
So our offspring is continuously gaining more and more mutations. The genetic load of mutations is increasing over time as we reproduce.
Yeah, genetic load is a real thing, but it actually supports the theory of evolution really well. Calculations have shown that, in order for the genetic load for humans to not grow to a point where it would cause genetic diseases that would eventually accumulate and result in our extinction, there needs to be a certain percentage of the human genome that is completely without function. Well, I guess not completely functionless. Its function would technically be a buffer zone for the genome, an area that allows for mutations to accumulate without doing any harm. I know creationists will like to latch onto this idea to say that, see, 100% of the genome serves a purpose, even the part that does nothing. Therefore, it's evidence of design. And if you're an old Earth creationist who believes that God created through evolution, then that works, I guess. But if you're denying evolution, then that means that you believe that God couldn't have come up with a better reproduction method that wouldn't result in a genetic load problem in the first place. Or I guess you could believe that God inserted at least 85% of our genome as part of the curse at the fall in order to curse us with the reproduction method that increases our genetic load, while at the same time protecting us from that curse for some reason? Meanwhile, for evolution, this is perfect, because occasionally a mutation in a non-functional region will cause that region to become functional, potentially with a new beneficial function, but more often than not, harmful. So the junk DNA is basically evolution's playground, and it makes progress through trial and error of the most cruel variety. Not a great system for a loving God to have set up.
This means that we did not all descend from a common ancestor. It means that we were created individually, and that we have built-in genetic diversity.
If we had built-in genetic diversity, mutations wouldn't be required. All the diversity that we need would be possible through simple recombination, the process by which a sperm and an egg will combine their genetic material to be a blend of genes that were present in the two parental genomes. So, how, in your mind, does an accumulation of mutations in the human genome show that our genomes don't need to mutate to increase genetic diversity, but that all diversity was there right from the start? It seems like any amount of mutating would be evidence against that position. So, once again, Matt doesn't even understand the creationist argument that he's trying to use.
And that creation science, once again, is something that you can show to be true.
Except that's not even close to what you've been doing here. What you have done is become the personification of my idea that creationist organizations deliberately word things in ways that will lead their audience to draw faulty conclusions that the people making the arguments know are faulty and are conclusions that they would never even pretend to have themselves. The fact that you don't understand the arguments well enough to correctly articulate them doesn't bother them, as long as you continue to be a young Earth creationist who is willing to support creationist organizations. Though, if you do get big enough in creationist circles while still being as obviously wrong as you are, even from a creationist perspective, then the bigger organizations will start to do things like include you on a list of bad creationist arguments, like Creation Ministries International did with Ron Wyatt and Carl Baugh.
Look, either God created the world, or the world created itself.
Either Matt Powell fucked a pie set out to cool, or the pie fucked itself. If you can figure out what's wrong with that statement, then you can also figure out what's wrong with Matt's statement. Hint, it's a false dichotomy, for starters.
Either everything popped into existence from magic, from nothing.
So, the creationist position.
Or it was designed.
Also the creationist position.
It's either magic or intelligent design.
Matt is fun because he tries more than any other creationist I've seen to turn the magic claim on its head, pretending like the science of cosmology with its theoretical physics, differential equations, direct observations, and working within our understanding of the laws of physics is somehow magic. Meanwhile, God literally said magic words that cause things to come into being is somehow not magic. Like, God says, "Let there be light," and there was. God delivered a magic incantation, and through the power of his magic, stuff came into being from nothing. But Matt tries so hard to make cosmology sound like it's the one resort into magic, meanwhile describing cosmology in exactly the words one would use to describe the biblical creation account. Most creationists will just get the quick dig in at the universe from nothing hypothesis, and then move on before their audience can process it enough to realize that universe from nothing is exactly what they believe. But Matt, he likes to take his time through it, letting it simmer and become as obviously ridiculous as it is. And of course, I'm obliged to point out that there are many cosmological models that describe possible beginnings for the cosmos, and only one of those has it coming out of nothing. And the nothing that it has it coming out of is not the nothing that creationists mean when they say nothing.
When I've discussed this with theologians and philosophers, some of them, And you ask, you know, what's nothing? And my argument is that these are scientific questions, not philosophical or theological ones. And I think the nothing that Aristotle would have had, or say Thomas Aquinas, or any of the people who first asked whys or something rather than nothing, that nothing would have been an eternal empty void, namely empty space. But once I argue that empty space can create something, then immediately I'm told that's not nothing.
Yeah.
And then I show that that space itself can be created from nothing, and then I'm told that's not nothing. And then I say, well, and because there are still laws of physics. And then I argue that, in fact, the laws of physics, for the reasons we've discussed, the anthropic principle, there may be many universes, and it's quite likely that even the laws of physics themselves arose by accident when the universe was created. So even the laws aren't there. And I'm told that's not nothing. And the definition of theologians, I think, for nothing is that from which only God can create something.
And it's also not a very popular model at that. Krauss is the only cosmologist that I am aware of who argues for it.
And anybody who considers the facts, many people have said, well, aren't you afraid of exposing evolution? A lot of these atheists will say, aren't you afraid, Matt, of exposing evolution to your viewers? Don't you realize people are going to end up leaving creationism in the droves?
I'd be really curious to see which atheist said that to him, because I suspect that it's none of them and that it's completely made up. Because anyone with even the most basic understanding of evolution would never think that Matt is actually doing anything that would amount to exposing his audience to evolution. He's not even capable of exposing them to a coherent straw man of evolution. No, what causes people to leave creationism is when you teach them the straw man of what evolution is for their whole lives, and then they are exposed to what evolution actually is and find that it makes perfect sense and is nothing like what they learned about it from creationists. Well, that's one path out, and that's the path Apologia took. For myself, it was the insistence on biblical inerrancy that did me in. When I looked into it, the Bible was so obviously and undeniably flawed, to the point where nearly every version of the Bible includes footnotes explaining some of the places where we know it is flawed, and since I believe that the Bible was God's message to us, and that our understanding this message was of primal importance to God, and God is omnipotent, so has the ability to make his message to us say whatever he wants it to say, even through the process of scribes copying it out thousands to millions of times over thousands of years. So the fact that there are places where different manuscripts say different things, and places where scribes at some point inserted sometimes entire paragraphs into the text, and other places that show evidence of parts of the text having been removed, demonstrated that the God I believed in, a God who is all-powerful and wants to get his incorruptible, important message to us and have everyone understand it, did not exist. And I did not find the apologetics addressing these problems to be sufficient. The idea that God inspired the original documents but then allowed future scribes to corrupt them while allowing the originals to be lost to history, or that God purposely made his message difficult and confusing, including allowing those changes, because he only wants a relationship with people who are willing to put in the effort, with everyone else being condemned to hell for not spending their lives reading not only the Bible, but the works of the ancient theologians and modern apologists. Neither of these apologetics aligned with who I thought the God of the Bible was. And, of course, my using uncertain language here will leave me open to the, well, you were never a true Christian attack. Yeah, they didn't align with who I thought the God of the Bible was, therefore I was wrong about who I thought the God of the Bible was, not that such a God doesn't exist. But as I thoroughly discussed in my video from a couple years ago called Proof of Not God, the Bible is really all you need to prove that the God described by the Bible does not exist.
But the fact of the matter is that people are not going to leave the light once they've seen the truth to go into believing in a counterfeit. Once you've seen the glorious light of the truth, it's almost impossible to just outright believe a lie.
Preach it, Brother Powell! Of course, with the stipulation that learning that one particular thing is a lie does not carry over into immunizing you from ever believing any future lies about any other topics.
Because the truth is so powerful and fears no investigation, that it stands up against all scrutiny that would come from all of these other worldviews that are imposed upon it and try to attack this model of creation science.
Well, you had me until you said creation science, because the fact of the matter is that you have to ignore the vast majority of the scientific body of knowledge in order to believe in creationism. So if you really believe what you just said, why are you a creationist? Creationists rely on ignorance and misrepresentation in order to promote their message. Why would that be the case if creationism were actually true? If you were right about everything that you claim, you wouldn't need to dishonestly edit other people's videos like you do. You wouldn't need to engage in quote mining, which you explicitly said is something that you don't see a problem with. Your behavior demonstrates that you are not confident in creation science's ability to stand up to even the most basic scrutiny, and you are right to not have confidence there. So in this video, you say you answer the question why you are a creationist. I haven't really seen an answer yet, so I ask you, why are you a creationist?
It is true. You can show it to be fact. Look, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth.
Magically out of nothing, to borrow your turn of phrase. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Michelle Jean 11, who says, I hate to say this, but DeSantis, who claims to be against indoctrination, has approved adding PragerU propaganda to the Florida education program, Florida and Texas being the leading outposts of Christian fascism and insanity. So we are much closer to religious fakery in schools than is comfortable. This was on my Eric Hoven video that went live on July 28th, a few days after it was announced that PragerU videos could be used in Florida public schools, in which I commented that teaching religious beliefs in a science classroom in public schools is unconstitutional in the United States. I then made a quip about the current Supreme Court being willing, if not eager, to find a case that they can use to allow Christianity into science class. But unfortunately, my video was edited and uploaded before the PragerU thing was announced, or I probably would have mentioned it there. Actually, given the length of that video, it's probably a good thing that I didn't have extra crap to talk about. So if you live in Florida, you might soon see clips like this one being played in public schools near you.
2018, the American Family Survey revealed that nearly half of adults under 30 do not identify with any religion. From a purely psychological point of view, this is not a good trend.
That certainly doesn't seem problematic at all. Thanks for watching. I'll be back next Friday with more, but if you need to get your rhino fix in before then, I live stream with Cirrus every Wednesday at 8:30 Eastern on my other channel, The Watering Hole, and I stream with my partner every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern here. Thanks to Tim Robertson for being my Patreon and sponsorships manager, and special thanks as always to my patrons, Luke H., Josh Albrex, sorry, Charles Payette, Geneva Hagen, and all the rest, who are the pterosaurs that were hunted by the Civil War soldiers that are my channel. If you'd like to be in a crappy X-Files wannabe TV show, you can join us on Patreon for as little as a dollar per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino, or by supporting the channel in one of the other methods that can be found at links.vicerhino.com, which is also where you'll find links to my other projects. If for whatever reason you want to send me stuff, my P.O. Box address is in the description. See you next time! Preach it, Brother Powell!